The Hatchcast is sponsored in part by Spartan Innovations. Spartan Innovations provides startups spinning out of MSU's ecosystem the commercialization support and financial resources necessary to turn MSU research technologies into successful Michigan businesses.
Welcome to
Creativity,
Risk-Taking,
Entrepreneurship,
Community,
Innovation,
Ambition.
This is
The Hatchcast.
Could state your name and just like a very brief overview of what you do?
Sure. I'm Matthew Growney. I serve as a senior advisor to fashion brands, both luxury and lifestyle, specializing in apparel, footwear, accessories, and a lot of the creative spaces around it.
Beautiful.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Chris Sell. I lead alumni engagement on behalf of the Burgess Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation here at MSU. And super thrilled to have a special guest here today, Matthew Growney. Came in from Boston. Of course, I think he's been all over the globe over here since the start of 2020, as he was telling us earlier today. But we're thrilled to have him back on campus, speaking both for Innovate State and then also spending some time with some of our student founders here in the Burgess Institute Discovery Program at the Hatch. But he's gracious enough to spend a few minutes with us on this Hatchcast specifically. And I know, Matthew, you've already spoke to this a couple of times to the various crowds you've been with the last couple of days. But if you could, for the subscribers to Hatchcast, just talk a little bit more about kind of what brought you to Michigan State and then what brought you after Michigan State to where you are now.
Sure. I came to Michigan State from mainly Chicago, where I grew up. And was in a high school that had a graduating class of over 600 kids. So I was lucky enough to come with 8 or 9 of my friends, my classmates from my high school, to Michigan State, largely in part because we all saw the same thing, which was this large university, you know, beautiful campus, but yet great diversity academically for a lot of our own individual needs. I wanted to be in business pre-law. My roommates were, and one was in film, the other was in econ. We had other friends that went into packaging. And so the diversity academically allowed us all to kind of fulfill those academic wishes. But the school was so big that it offered all of us kind of this amazing large opportunity to be together and kind of grow that community with, you know, groups of other kids that we met, you know, from Michigan and outside the state, and even in some instances outside the country. After I graduated, I ended up working in technology for Motorola. A very exciting time for Motorola, certainly because of the cell phone business, the advent of mobile technology, the growth of just being able to give everyone almost a voice with a type of device, whether it was a pager, a cell phone, two-way radios, a public radio, etc. And at Motorola, I was given the opportunity to be an M&A associate, and then I went into corporate strategy. And then within corporate strategy, I learned kind of how to do transactions. So buying and selling little pieces of companies, buying and selling technologies, and eventually buying and selling entire companies, and then learning how to integrate them into a big, you know, $30, $40 billion company like Motorola. At the end of that, I created a business model to allow a company like Motorola to take small interests into young entrepreneurship ventures and startup companies. That effort became known as Motorola Ventures, which became probably one of the more predominant corporate venture capital programs in the late 90s and early 2000s, maybe overshadowed by only Intel Capital. Motorola Ventures grew, we grew that to about $450 million assets under management in 70-plus different companies from around the world. And really exciting companies, companies that were in solar, companies that were in material sciences, companies like Sport Vision, which is the yellow line on every football game on TV. So really an exciting portfolio. I did leave eventually to try my own hand at entrepreneurship, where I established a children's tablet company for the education market. Eventually merged that with a software company in New York. And then as of recent, really kind of went back towards something I really, really, really liked, which was kind of the creative space. Certainly some innovation involved, but became an advisor to initially Puma, but also the broader kind of caring family of companies in luxury and lifestyle and kind of its ecosystem of, you know, luxury designers, and have worked with them on everything from new designer collaborations, retail design and experiences, marketing activations, and even some product development. I also run a fund on the side that's geared at finding, identifying, and investing in young luxury brands or young modern luxury brands. So, you know, by day, it's great to work looking at and working with large brands. And, you know, the other half of the day or night or whatever you want to call it, I get to evaluate kind of these young new luxury brands and kind of see how much cross-pollination we can have within that ecosystem.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you so much. So I would like to start by saying that I just started about 2 years ago, started a small like startup streetwear brand kind of, where I just thought I really like design and I really like photography and I really like reading and finding and gathering these quotes. So why not put them on a shirt and see if I make money from it? And so that was kind of a side project I did for a long time. And I always really, really, really loved the creative part of it. But the business side was never really my favorite. Of course, like advertising was kind of fun, finding those little niches and spaces like where you could get people to enjoy your product and specifically like get the most out of the ad money you're spending. But in terms of keeping track of everything and building it in the background, I never was the best at that and I never really understood it. So from that, how do you think the business side, of especially like fashion businesses, and then the creative side merge together or even overlap?
Well, I mean, the business part is more important, certainly, in my opinion.
I agree.
Than the creative part. And we see a lot of brands struggle, a lot of designers struggle, and a lot of designers ultimately fail because they can't figure out the business side of things. So there are certainly a couple trends. One is, you know, for every great designer, they should find a business operator. And so that's a marriage, and marriages aren't easy. So finding the right partner, the one with the right amount of experience. You will see Gucci, for instance, while it has Alessandro Michele as its creative director, it has a CEO. So every great kind of brand has a vision designer person, and yet it also has a master operator at the helm. Other scenarios are, you know, look, you can also, you know, sell half your brand to a brand management company, and they will take care of all of that heavy lifting for you. They will set up sales appointments for you. They will handle your web. They'll handle your back office. They will do your financials for you, and they'll just let you design. Of course, it will cost you 50%, 60%, 70% of your equity, but you know that if your company's worth $100 million, then what do you care if you're left with $25 or $30 million?
Just to sit there and,
just to sit there and design. Yeah. Exactly. So, those are certainly, you know, two very specific trends. I mean, in a perfect world, you know, every good designer should have a business sense and a business acumen. They should know a couple of things. One is the value of costs. What does the costs really mean? You know, a Riri zipper is $6 or $7. Do you really need a $6 or $7 zipper versus a YKK zipper that's a dollar? You know, what do you actually get for the extra $5? You know, some designers just want the best of everything, but they don't really know that they don't really need it. It's a nice to have, not a need to have. And the other thing is, you know, designers should really learn, you know, kind of how to kind of manage just basic finances. You know, how do they handle runway? How do they handle a budget? You know, many of them are great at social media. They're great at talking about themselves. They're great at talking about their design. They're great at giving away product to influencers. But I think they run out of money.
Exactly,
they run out of runway.
Yeah.
So just having a discipline in business around things like budget and things about cost, I think those are two very simple things that I think designers would ultimately benefit greatly from if they just, I think, spend a little bit more time and attention on.
So you said... It didn't really sound like you were differentiating the creative side from the business side, but I would just like to ask to clarify, do you feel there still is the creative side in the business money management portion? Like, do you think an entrepreneur can be creative even if it's not, like, strictly creative by definition?
Yeah. I mean, look, creative is a mindset. Creative is a, you know, it's an expression form. You can be creative in all industries. So I don't take away from that. There are people who, you know, they express their creativity in accounting and in legal through their marketing. They can't be overly creative in applying the law for obviously reasons, or for financial reporting for SEC regulation reasons, as an example. But no, creativity can flourish anywhere. I just think that the differentiation that we see is that usually creatives in the fashion and in even the consumer brand space have trouble grasping all of the mechanics of operating a business because they're very busy being creative.
Yeah.
And they, you know, it leads them into trouble, I think, more times than not.
So really quick, if there is a, say, either my brand, the brands you've talked to today, whether it be clothing or otherwise, but I guess we could focus on clothing because we are on to that. What is a piece of advice or a few sentences just about how a new up-and-coming brand can kind of break out? Because you see, especially nowadays with drop shipping and everything like that, there are hundreds if not thousands of new brands forming every week, every month. So how do you go from just being one of the thousands to millions to that brand that has the identity, that has the personality that consumers want to go to?
Sure.
It's the heat, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's a human connection. I think brands, old or young, are most likely to succeed if they can create a human connection with their consumer. And that human connection is physical sometimes, meaning there should be a physical presence or there should be some opportunity to physically experience the brand. Some call that a pop-up shop. Some call that an activation or a sponsorship. Some call that retail installation. But you want to give the consumers a reason to care, not just for your product, but you want them to care about your journey as a founder, your journey as an entrepreneur. You want them to support your cause, whether that cause is a non-for-profit cause, a CSR cause, corporate socially responsible cause, or it's just they want to see you win. You're passionate about the business. You have an amazing story to tell, and people want to support that story. They want to support you. And so, you know, many times that is just the founder being able to share their brand story, share who they are and why it matters. It's not, hey, a drop in a black hoodie, it's only 500, go. I mean, there's that every 5 minutes.
Exactly.
So it's really the person, you know, where did you come from? Why a black hoodie? I grew up wearing black hoodies. I saved all these black hoodies. They're salvaged. I rescued them from Salvation Army. I've marked them up. I've partnered. I'm giving away a percentage of every sale to the children's arts community. I mean, those are examples of brands that I've encountered where they have been very authentic with their stories, and they are very open in sharing those stories, which I think then created that human connection with their buyers, and you know, it ultimately made them, you know, successful so far.
Yeah, exactly. So the personality behind a brand is kind of the personality of the founder, especially at the beginning, as well as the brand's personality.
Yeah, because you don't even have a product yet.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just you. You're talking about a product.
You're trying to sell yourself, which it's kind of like the company is a front for yourself to try and sell that as well.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't want to take you. It's 1 o'clock. I don't want to take you too far over. Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to add really quick?
Thank you very much for
giving us
all
your
time.
No, thank you. It's been great. It's been great being back on campus.
Beautiful. Hey.
This episode of the Hedgecast is brought to you by the MSU Entrepreneurship Association. The MSUEA is a registered student organization open to all majors who are passionate about entrepreneurship. Find out more at msuea.org.
This episode of the Hatchcast is brought to you by Burgess Institute for Entrepreneurship and Innovation. Burgess Institute empowers students to learn through action by providing programs, courses, and resources to foster an entrepreneurial mindset and create new ventures. One name, one program, Limitless U. Learn more at eship.msu.edu.
Hatchcast was created by me, Aaron Richard, and is produced by the Burgess Institute for Entrepreneurship in cooperation with the MSU Foundation. Gabe Hales is our editor and sound designer. Our co-producers and writers include Gabe Hales, Brandon Weaver, and myself. Original music and sound is created by Katya Gaudina, with help from Aubrey Haas, Brandon Weaver, Caitlin Setter, Sydney Owinga, Kurt Krieger, Tyler Mihai, Gabriella Ellum, Jeff Smith, Paul Jakes, Ken Smuziak, Desiree Melfi, Neil Kane, and Laurie Fisher. Thank you.